Good evening. I'm Nancy Nangeroni, and this is Gender Talk. Hello again, this is Gender Talk, the only worldwide radio show that talks about transgenderism in the first person. Each week we bring you news, information, music, and exciting new voices that challenge our traditional view of gender. Tonight our topic is an obvious one to many folks in the Boston area. Last Friday, the jury in the trial of William Palmer for the murder of Chanel Pickett acquitted Palmer on all charges of murder, finding him guilty only of simple assault and battery. The verdict shocked not just the transgender community, but people from all walks of life who had been following the case. Stay tuned for this and more tonight on Gender Talk.
And the views and opinions presented on this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another Gender Talk. Well, I feel very serious tonight, but I promise it won't be an entirely serious show. We will have some fun, too. We're going to get right to the Twisted Nasty News, but before we do, I want to tell you that those of you who watch Hard Copy
hard
out
copy.
There,
wow.
That epitome of quality journalism.
Much like Gender Talk.
Wait a second.
Well, in fact, we now have a marriage of the two. Gender Talk will be on Hard Copy. A brief glimpse of Gender Talk will be on Hard Copy.
If they're camera, they'll get to see what we look like.
Exactly. Wow. If you want to see what we look like, Friday at 4:30 p.m. on Channel 7 in the Boston area, Friday at 4:30 p.m. on Channel 7, there will be a 3 to 4 minute piece on the transgender community, including a clip from Gender Talk. So check it out. If you miss it Friday night, you know you can catch it at 3 o'clock in the morning Saturday.
Well, you can't beat that.
You know, you've got two chances at it. So anyway,
wow.
Yeah, so we're breaking into
us.
The big time, national TV for Gender Talk.
Go on.
Does that mean we're going to have to retitle the show Soft Copy?
Uh-huh. Oh, how?
Well, I don't know. Anyway, you ready to do the Twisted Nasty thing? Hal's always, always ready. You ready to do it? Take it away.
Yeah, ask anyone.
Yeah.
Good evening, this is Hal Fuller with the May the 7th edition of the Gender Talk Twisted Nasty News. And we're going to start with a story from Boston, actually. Two area youths were allegedly stalked and beaten while the perpetrators shouted anti-gay epithets outside of Tower Records in City's Back Bay just after 9:30 on April the 23rd. The victims, Danny Rollins, 18 of Malden, and J.D. Kamer, 18 of Chestnut Hill, were allegedly followed while in the store by three men described as white, 17 to 20 years old, wearing baseball caps, and were subsequently punched while the men yelled faggot and other slurs. According to Rollins, he was punched in the back of the head as he left the store alone. Once he fell, the assailants allegedly began kicking him as well. So, bashing is alive and well in Boston. This story from Melbourne, Florida. The Brevard Library Board has resisted demands that librarians pull from the shelves Daddy's Roommate, a book about a boy and his gay father. So two mothers have turned to the Brevard County Commission to get the book pulled, at least moved from the children's section. It is geared to teach six-year-olds to accept homosexuality, Coral Craig told commissioners. Craig collected 100 signatures for a petition she presented commissioners. The five-member commission can override the library board's decision if a single commissioner places an item on a meeting. Blah, 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 blah. The book is written from the viewpoint of a young boy whose father has divorced his mother and moved in with a male partner. It caused a stir in some cities when it was published in 1900. The American Civil Liberties Union of Brevard County supported the library board's decision to keep the book on its shelves. Good
Yay.
For them.
Good. Small victories.
Small victories, and sometimes that's all you get.
This week.
And this story from Paris. In what is being called the most astounding breakthrough ever in the field of human biochemistry, got that? Scientists have created a new pill that triggers sexual orgasms in women. The aspirin-sized tablet is taken...
I want a prescription.
The aspirin-sized tablet is taken orally and acts within 20 minutes, stimulating the vagus nerve and key areas of the brain. It produces waves of euphoric pleasure lasting from a few seconds all the way up to 2 minutes in some women.
Oh, is that all?
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Is experts. That all? Oh, come on. Jeez.
Oh, I don't know. 2 minutes sounds like
it'll give you a heart attack.
No, I'm kidding. 2 minutes.
Welcome back, Anna.
Good way to go.
Experts say the sensation is even more intense than actual intercourse and far more satisfying than masturbation. Maybe they just aren't doing it right. The pill's creators, French Beverly Whipple, don't squeeze the Charmin, recently announced they had isolated an orgasm-creating chemical that the body itself produces. I was aware of that chemical for some time and created a synthetic form of it. The pill, known as synthetic vasoactive intestinal peptide.
Oh, yeah, that's sexy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Come on, yeah. I'm panting already.
Maybe pass the peptides, honey.
Maybe available in France by prescription only.
Prescription only?
What happens if men take it?
It doesn't say. Maybe they haven't tried yet.
Good question.
Huh. The creator says, I was fortunate enough to discover it first. Two Rutgers University researchers were also working on it.
I'm sure they were very fortunate. I'm sure everyone who discovered it is very fortunate.
He's very happy now.
According to Dr. Renee Breller, author of Society and Addiction, The Interaction of Drugs and Human Relationships, we have no idea what repercussions this pill may have. If women grow too attached to this pill and begin to prefer it to actual sexual intercourse with men, it could
then
result
what good will we be?
In the demise of the entire species.
The demise of the entire species.
I like that.
And long overdue, in my opinion.
Wow. This story from Thailand. Thai television is drowning in drag queens, according to the Bangkok Post. Tune into any daytime television channel these days, and before long, you may well see a character who is male, but whose behavior is a wild parody of female mannerisms. Exaggerated ladylike daintiness, drag queen hijinks, campy verbal acrobatics. They're all in the repertoire, according to the Bangkok Post. No woman could hope to compete with their version of over-the-top super femininity. It's sort of like jocks.
Why not?
And evidently, audiences love it. Male cross-dressers are now familiar figures, guaranteeing to bring an instant laugh in TV comedies, dramas, talk shows, and game shows.
What I want to know is, why could no woman hope to compete?
I don't know. Ask the Bangkok Post.
I mean, we know of women who have done the drag thing and had a great time with it.
Like Cher? Like Liza Minnelli? Like yes. Madonna?
Yes, I wouldn't want to. Yeah. Thank you.
Even Annie Lennox in one of her videos did some of the best high drag I've
ever
seen.
Come on, Annie is awesome.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So.
Well, Nancy, this sounds like a calling for you.
Oh, yeah, I'm real talented along those lines.
Okay, one final word about Ellen DeGeneres from herself. She said, quote, "Are you sick of hearing about me? I'm sick of hearing about me."
Is that it?
That's all. That's all we need to hear.
Yay, Ellen.
Yeah, I'm sort of that. And here's a hot story. Eddie Murphy.
Oh, yes.
In case you haven't heard, in case you've been hibernating for the last half a week,
was pulled over by sheriff's deputies in West Hollywood, California, and a cross-dressing prostitute he had picked up was arrested in a prior warrant, authorities said. No charges were brought against the Beverly Hills cop because he hadn't done anything. It wasn't like we drove to some dark spot to do something, Murphy told television's Entertainment Tonight. It was like they pulled me over. That's a hooker. She has warrants. You be careful, Eddie. Go on home now. That's what it was.
Poor little Eddie Murphy.
Murphy's attorney told the E! Cable channel that the actor stopped to help the prostitute, good guy that he is, who seemed disjointed as he walked along the prostitute, I guess, Santa Monica Boulevard at about 4:45 a.m. Everyone's disjointed at 4:45 in the morning. After Murphy stopped his car, the prostitute asked for a lift home, said attorney Marty Singer. Eddie was shocked to hear that he was a transvestite. He thought he was doing someone a favor.
Well, not according to a Howard Stern guest this morning, actually. There was a male-to-female transsexual who was on the show and was taking a lie detector test. And the gist
a
of...
A lie detector test?
Oh, yes.
What the heck?
Hooked up to the little polygraph and everything. And the claims being made and the claims that were substantiated by an expertly administered polygraph test were that Eddie Murphy has a thing for trans people, likes to have phone sex with them, meets them through ads, and loves to play with their feet. He's apparently a foot guy.
Oh, joy.
Wow.
Yes. Shall we talk about the perils of athlete's foot here. I mean, a public service message.
He could bring that sort of stuff home to his wife.
Tenactin, folks. One word, tenactin.
Latex gloves and tenactin.
There you go.
Yum.
Or latex socks.
Wow.
And one final story, holding up to my reputation of being totally tasteless. This story from Raleigh, North Carolina.
That's not what I hear, Hal.
Yeah. Who have you been talking to, honey? Police were called to quell a disturbance at a man's funeral when the deceased, the guy in the coffin, developed an erection, prompting an altercation between his wife and his alleged mistress.
Well, wait, so he's still alive, right? They took him off the machine too soon.
No, he was quite dead.
He had the erection while he's dead?
Apparently,
I don't think that works.
This is fairly common, according to some undertakers, that the formaldehyde sort of settles into flaccid parts of the body, like the lips or the earlobes or the penis.
It makes him not flaccid anymore, huh?
This just happened to occur when the guy's mistress walked in and his wife went ballistic. And they ended up in
even
this altercation.
In death, he prefers you to me.
I wonder if it's an indication of his experience in the afterlife. I don't know.
Oh.
It's a sign.
It's a sign. When the widow noticed the activity in the crotch of the deceased trousers...
What was she doing staring at his crotch? What do you do? You go to funerals and stare at the deceased's crotch?
Not generally, no.
Maybe she was reminiscing, you know, pleasurably.
I'm going to miss it always.
One last, kind of.
Yeah, anyway, the wife was screaming that the other woman was still interfering in her marriage. And so she went for her.
Oh, honey.
And that's it for this edition of the Gender Talk Twisted Nasty News. Twisted Nasty as usual.
That's quite a trip.
Yeah. Hey, could that be like consensual necrophilia?
Really?
I don't know. Just a thought.
Hal, we've got another
new kink.
We have another caller on the phone that I want to get onto the board so she can hear the show. We have Gabrielle Pickett on the phone now, and we have someone else listening on the phone now. Diane, why don't you bring up Diane for a second? And Diane, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm doing good. How are you?
Terrific, hon. I want to ask you to sort of relent so we can put Gabrielle on the board.
Okay.
I hate to ask you to do this. I sure appreciate you calling in. What we'll do is we'll not keep Gabrielle on for the whole show. And can you call back later in the show?
Sure.
Okay, that would be just terrific. Diane, by the way, you are, tell me if I get this right, you're one of the people who was prepared to testify in the case but was not called upon to do so?
Yes, I was.
In the murder case. Okay, hon. If you don't mind, if you could call us back in about, I would say, like after the hour. Or are you able to listen to the program?
Yes, I am.
Okay, if you're able to listen to it on the radio, if you could call us back when you hear Gabrielle hang up, then we can put you back on.
Okay.
Thank you so much, honey.
Okay, you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Okay, great. Now.
Wow.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got to tell you, Friday. All right, let's start talking about this, folks. The rest of the show, we'll do announcements at the top of the hour and all. Gabrielle, are you with us on the phone now?
Yes, I am.
How are you doing tonight, honey?
I'm wonderful. How are you, Nancy?
Great, thanks.
Great.
Thank you so much for calling in. Well, what we have lined up to do tonight is Hal and I have each written a piece. Mine is probably the boring one, and Hal's is probably the interesting one. But we've each written something. Oh, by the way, Hal, Adrian Lynch, who was the prosecutor in the case, says she loves, she said, who's that, who's your sidekick on the show? I just love him. So anyway, Hal, there you go. Kudos from Adrian Lynch, who's very likely listening tonight, by the way. Hi, Adrian, if you're out there.
Yes, hello, Adrian.
Yeah. Okay, Gabrielle, so what we're going to do is we're going to, we'll leave you on so you can listen in, but we're going to take your level down so you can't talk, okay?
Okay.
Just for a few minutes while Hal and I do read some pieces here that we have. If it gets boring, somebody will shut us up, and
okay,
we'll move on. Okay, thanks, hon. All right, so Hal, you ready to take it away?
Certainly.
Okay, because both you and I have been following this case for a while.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but I was just enormously pissed off, I got to say.
Yeah.
I just got some things I have to get off my chest, but I've instructed everybody here in the studio that if it gets boring or too long or whatever, that they'll stop me, and we'll go to open conversation.
Well, I just want to start out my little electronic soapbox by saying this is purely my opinion. Last week, alleged murderer of transsexual Chanel Pickett was exonerated of her death instead found guilty of the minimal charge of assault and battery. Justice failed us again. Whether it was inconclusive presentation by the prosecution or confusing evidence from the medical examiner, or the prevailing attitude that trans folk, gays, sex workers, drug users, whatever, are non-people, disposable, perverted, whatever the dynamic, the system failed us again. Cynicism says, yeah, so what should you expect? Fear says, thank God it wasn't me. If I keep my head down and mouth shut, maybe they will leave me alone. They won't, you know. A verdict like this declares open season. Silence and invisibility feeds the killers. The lie, the hurt, thrives in the darkness. Brandon Tina, Deborah Forte, Tyra Hunter, Chanel Pickett. How many other queens and kings and fags and dykes killed because of difference, or lives shattered, made hell because of fear and hatred? So what can we do? Be visible. Speak out. Be out. Write. Picket. Phone. Write your congressmen, city councilors, newspapers. Stand together. Scream against the silence, the darkness. Work against it. Do what you can. It's your life and the lives of your queer brothers and sisters. Do what we can do. What we must do. In pride, love, and dignity. A personal opinion by Hal Fuller.
Wow. That was terrific. I tell you what, I'm not going to read what I have to say now. I want to let that stand. Mm-hmm. I'll come back after the break at the top of the hour and do my thing here, but let's bring Gabrielle back up, if you would, Hal. And let's, hi Gabrielle, you back with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, great. And sitting here on my right is Laurie Affont.
Hi, Gabrielle, this is Laurie.
Hi, Laurie, how are you?
Good. I hope you remember me. I was the redhead next to you at the memorial service. And I've been thinking about you all year long, and I send my blessings to you, my sister.
Oh, thank you, sister. I do appreciate it greatly. It's
yeah.
been a rough year.
I'll say. I mean, I can't imagine what it... I mean, it's tough enough to be a transsexual, but to be in a family where you're... Is it fair to say you're relatively estranged from your parents? I don't mean to sort of put things on you, but...
No.
To be relatively estranged from your parents, to have a twin sister who's also transsexual, and then to have her brutally taken from your life, has got to be... absolutely crushing. And
oh, it is. I mean, she was my... We went through the hormone therapy, all those things that girls go through, as you know, together.
Wow. I mean, that's...
And for a decision to come down as it did was absolutely devastating.
You know, you got to know, Gabrielle, just that there are a lot of people, not just people in the transgender community and not just people in the queer community,
who are not satisfied with that verdict. I'm aware of that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, I'm aware of that. But, you know, it makes you not really have much faith in the justice system. You know, Judge Barton being on the bench from the beginning kind of surprised me.
How so?
Tell
us, yeah.
I was under the impression that we went before him, or Palmer had appeared before him to get his bail reduced. Now, the prosecution was asking $3 million bail when this first happened.
Uh-huh.
If I'm not mistaken, he is the judge who reduced it to $50,000.
He used the judge? Is that what you said?
He Pardon? Is the judge.
He what?
Is.
I believe he was the same judge who reduced the bail from $3 million to $50,000.
Sure.
Am I correct?
I believe so. I think they have the same judge all the way through the case, don't they?
Right. That kind of surprised me.
That he reduced it that much. The bail is ridiculous.
Well, that he reduced the bail down to $50,000 from $3 million, and that it was the same judge presiding over the case.
Interesting.
That surprised me a great deal.
I don't know what the protocol is there, hon. I don't know if
that's normal or not. My feeling is, if a judge is going to reduce the bail from... The prosecution was asking $3 million. He reduces the bail to $50,000. I don't want that kind of judge presiding over my case. How about you?
Well,
I think a point that should be made is
absolutely
quickly that $50,000 bail in a capital case is somewhat unique.
Exactly.
Well, you know, yeah, at the same time as this case was going on, Gabrielle, at the same time that he was released, at the same time that Palmer was released on $50,000 bail, there was a transsexual in California who was held on $250,000 bail on a charge of attempted murder when her father shot at her.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
Well, see, you see my point about our system in the United States. It's not fair to, or kind to, you know, transgenders at all.
Transgenders as well as poor people.
Absolutely.
And people of color, of course.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. Well, there's no question.
That's absolutely ridiculous.
What?
She was, her father shot at her, and she was held for $250,000 bail.
Yes. Yeah, crazy case.
Her family and herself, I'm sure.
What do you think, for those of us, for those who weren't there at all, I know you couldn't be there for the whole thing.
Right.
Do you have any clue what it was that made the jury go the way they did? I mean, they found the medical evidence not compelling,
well,
but would they do that?
You know what happened, Nancy, that really surprised me?
Uh-huh.
Is that a man like Palmer, first of all, there were two experts from the O.J. trial.
Right.
Okay, we all know about the O.J. trial. We all know what kind of things happened during that trial, during the trial. So during this trial, he paid two experts from the O.J. team of experts $250 per hour for a total of 20 hours. Now, if you people at home do your math, you know what that works out to.
How much was that work out?
About $10,000.
Jeez, I love it.
Each. You know?
Too much money.
Pardon?
Too much money involved in this case.
Yeah, I think it may be a little bit more than that, if I'm not mistaken.
The way that the defense summed up these guys, I mean, in the defense, I was able to attend just the closing arguments, as you know, Gabrielle.
Uh-huh.
And the way the defense summed up these witnesses in their testimony, he read sort of a litany of all the places where they'd testified, and he argued that this made them more believable. To me, it made them more obviously hired guns.
Exactly.
People whose testimony can be bought for a price.
Exactly, and it wouldn't surprise me if the judge wasn't also. It really would not.
Well, I think that's probably, you know, I had a long conversation today with Adrian Lynch.
Did you really?
Yeah, you know, I asked because I was feeling like the judge was, I've been in contact with the DA's office throughout, mm-hmm. and it seemed to me like the judge could have done more to address the issue of transphobia and homophobia.
Oh, absolutely.
As well as simple prejudice in the use of drugs. I mean, it was no secret that there were drugs involved,
right.
And yet they seemed to work for William Palmer and against Chanel.
Yeah, but you know,
but
William Palmer has been... William Palmer had... Do you know, are you familiar with the Haymarket?
A little bit.
A club that was in... It was in or on the edge of the combat zone.
Uh-huh.
It was... Haymarket was a very popular club. And William Palmer frequented Haymarket.
Okay, that was the name of a club. Oh,
right.
Okay. No, so
now,
I'm not familiar with that.
Now, this was in 1989 when the doors of Haymarket apparently closed.
Uh-huh.
We arrived here... 1993.
Right.
Okay. So you've got a whole 4 years there. Right?
So he was frequenting... The Haymarket was a tranny club?
Oh, Haymarket was gay, straight, and tranny club. Yes, darling. Mm. And from what I understand, cocaine consumption... Palmer was doing cocaine and hanging out in the scene from 1989...
Oh, my.
...at the Haymarket. And who knows how... long before.
You know, we have Diane on the phone. You remember Diane? She was also going to testify to having run into Palmer. We had her on the phone, and she'll be calling us back up a little bit later.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, we'll talk with her about what she knows about William Palmer. What I was going to say about Adrian Lynch...
I've talked with several girls since the verdicts come in, and, you know, there were at least 10 witnesses...
Really?
...that had been with Palmer.
Oh, my.
They know Palmer. One girl had a relationship with Palmer, and these witnesses were not allowed in the courtroom, okay?
Why?
The judge would only allow 2 witnesses.
Wow.
You believe that?
So...
That's why I don't... I think this entire verdict... I'm so outraged by this.
So, so you hold the judge responsible?
I hold the judge personally responsible for this man getting off for murdering my sister. You're absolutely right.
All right.
What reason did the judge give for only allowing 2 witnesses?
Not a very good one.
Do you remember what that was?
No, I'm not sure. Okay. I spoke with Adrian about why he was only allowing two judges and...
Two witnesses, yeah.
Two witnesses. And at this point, I really can't remember.
Yep.
Instead of saying something that's not true, I just cannot remember at this point.
Right.
I mean, my first reaction on Friday when I heard this outcome was anger at the jury, but also anger at the judge for not allowing more testimony, because it was very easy for the defense to assail the testimony of two witnesses.
Oh, absolutely.
Had there been five or six or seven or eight witnesses, then perhaps things would have been more clear. Perhaps it would have been more difficult.
There are these witnesses, the additional witnesses that were not called to testify. I know for a fact that they're all upstanding citizens in the community.
Uh-huh.
I've checked myself.
Yeah.
That's how I know. So when I hear that the judge, when I ever heard the judge say that he was not going to allow, he was only going to allow rather two witnesses.
Uh-huh. Bad news.
I thought we were in trouble right then. When I heard that, I thought the case was in trouble. As soon as I heard that, because they have gone through, these people were called to the prosecution's office to testify and go over their testimony, you know, make sure that, you know, these people know what they're talking about. You know how you prepare people to go in front of a judge and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the fact that these people were definitely with William Palmer, these girls, these transgenders.
Yep.
They were definitely with him. It's basically undisputable.
Well, there's never been a case like this before that I've heard of, at least not since 1990, and I don't think before then, where so many people have come forward and been willing to testify in court
and not being allowed to testify
at personal risk to themselves. I mean,
exactly.
A lot of these people would have been outing themselves, and they were taking personal risk in doing so, and yet they weren't allowed to do so. That's a really good point.
I talked to a person in the Playland Cafe just yesterday, and do you know what she told me?
What?
She told me that she has been with William Palmer for 8 years.
No way.
She has known the man for 8 years.
My goodness.
And you know what?
What's that?
If you want, hang on 1 second. I may have her phone number handy.
Okay, we'll have to ask you to give that to us off the air, honey.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, why don't you hang on a second? You know what? We need to take a break now. We need to do some announcements and all.
Sure.
Would you do us a favor? Get that phone number, and somebody will come on the phone and take that from you.
Wonderful.
Terrific. Gabrielle.
Nancy, I have to take my hat off to you. You have been absolutely phenomenal. The things that you have done to make sure that this issue, you and Hal basically have... made sure that this is not just swept under the carpet.
I got to tell you, as far as I'm concerned, I haven't done. If I'd done my job, then this wouldn't have happened. I feel like there's more work that needs to be done, and
our work isn't done.
I'm sorry.
That just means our work isn't done.
Exactly.
Have to do more.
Well, geez, that's all I need is more work.
I just think that I owe the world to you. And I thank you.
Well, Gabrielle, thank you very much. You're very gracious, and the hearts not just of everyone, not just my heart and everyone here, but of all of Boston are going out to you right now. Honey, you have friends that you can call on, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, Gabrielle. Take care of yourself. Stay on the line, please.
I will. I'm just going to get that number. I'll be right back.
Yes. Great. All right. If you've tuned in late, this is Gender Talk on WMBR in Cambridge, 88.1 FM. First on your dial, we're talking about the Chanel Pickett murder case. We're talking about the William Palmer
acquittal.
Thank you, Ross. I knew somebody would come to my rescue here. Let's see. Let's do our announcements now. We're going to come back to more talk about the Chanel Pickett case, and we want to hear from you. We're going to be having a meeting Thursday night to talk about what is the right response for this community. We're going to be planning an action, and we want to hear from you. We want to know what you think we ought to be doing. Our number is 253-8810. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. We're going to do the announcements, and then we want to hear from you again. 253-8810 is our number. Stay with us, please. Okay, take it away, guys. I'm gonna step out while you do the announcements and make sure that Gabrielle gets all set up, okay?
We're big kids. We won't.
You know, if I turn my back for more than 2 minutes, you're going to take the show away from me.
Nancy leaves the studio. We're going to have a party.
Okay, take it away, guys.
All right. Well, I get to do the first one. Okay?
Well, okay.
It's an F to M group. It's the American Boys. And they meet on Friday, May 9th at 7 p.m. at 123 Moody Street in Waltham. It's a group of gender-variant people of any biology who are pronounced female at birth, but who feel that that's not a complete or accurate assessment of who they are. So if you're interested in going, it's a group of all different kinds of ages, and you can call either Mike at 617-899-2212 or Frankie at 617-899-1718.
Okay, and there's a women's poetry slam for Sojourner on Friday, May 9th at the Blackman Auditorium in the L Building at Northeastern University with host Lisa King and guests Rosario Morales, Leslea Newman, Alda Marshall, and others. So it's a poetry slam, and that means it's competitive, and there's a $300 first prize and a $150 second prize, and all the money that comes from this will benefit the Sojourner Feminist Institute. Let's see, for more information, call Northeastern at 617-373-2247, or you can call Sojourner at...
Excuse me. No,
you can call Sojourner at 617-373-2184.
Cool. Okay. Well, there's a fundraiser to send Miss Gay Massachusetts to the finals in Dallas. That will be held this Saturday, May 10th, from 9 p.m. to 1 in the morning at Club 911. Is that right?
Yes. 911? Club 911.
Club 911 on William Street in Chelsea. This year, Miss Gay Massachusetts is Felicity Lane.
You should remember that.
I do.
We saw her win.
Boy, is she a cutie. You should definitely go to this. And so the number for information is 617-884-9533.
Okay, another Sojourner benefit, Out for Laughs 97. That's with comedians Kathy Najimi, Burtis Berry, Tina D'Elia, and Michelle Balin. Saturday, May 17th at 8 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium. Woo-hoo! At good old MIT. For more information, call Sojourner at 617-524-0415. And there is an admission fee. This event is sponsored by Sojourner and the MIT Thistle.
And boy, was that funny last year. See, a good event. Another F2M group, the East Coast Female to Male Group,
EFTMG.
Something like that. They meet on Sunday, May 11th from 3 to 6 p.m. on 146 Riverbank Road in Northampton, Massachusetts. This month is an exciting month for them. Their topic is pissing and packing. So, Alex,
so you all get out
yeah.
there.
Pissing and packing.
Don't you wish you were
the
an FTM?
The most important things, right.
The number for more information is 413-584-7616.
I'm a tremble already.
Well, I guess the MTFs have similarly,
similarly exciting
concerns.
Okay, Mocha. A demonstration of the reality condom.
Yeah.
Tuesday, May 13th, 6 p.m.
I want to go there.
That's right. Now, that's for those of you who are behind the times, reality is a female condom, which...
Not just a female condom.
That's right. It could be used for protection in male-male penetrative sex.
It's not just for breakfast anymore.
So if you want more information on the Bottoms Up workshop...
A demo. Hello, girlfriends.
A demo. Call 617-423-6622.
Okay, and then lastly, this is still University of New Hampshire's GLBT Awareness Month.
More like a half month.
Half month. Well, we've already been through their counting ability. But it's at UNH in Durham. And for more information, you should call the Alliance at 603-862-4522. And there's a lot going on, so give us a call here and we'll tell you about it.
Good work.
You can also call Ed Thomas at 603-862-2050.
Well, thank you, boss.
All right. And our number here is 253-8810. We have another announcement on the line. Are you with me, Heather? Can you hear me? Hello, Heather.
I'll bet you
can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. How you doing, hon?
Pretty good.
So you're calling to tell us about Pride events so people can plan their Pride Week in advance.
Yeah.
Okay. What's going on?
Well, we got three or four big events happening this year.
Now, this is Transgender Pride, right?
Transgender Pride it is. As part of the larger Pride Week.
Yes.
And we're going to have several different events, but I will give you a rundown of three events that I would say is a must-go-to event.
Okay, great.
The first one would be on Wednesday, June 4th.
Yes.
And it's going to be an open house at IFGE, which a lot of people,
cool.
You know, recognize.
Yeah, what time does that start?
That starts at 7 and goes to 9 p.m. And
that's
there'll be
great.
Refreshments and food and stuff.
And IFGE people. And IFGE people. So that's
going
to be exciting.
And IFGE people.
You know, we have a great crew at IFGE. I got to tell you, and everybody should meet Allison Lang, Jean Marie Stein, Nancy Kane, Joan Hoff, and Michael Holly, and the others who work there at IFGE. I mean, we really do have a very good crew there, and I recommend that to everyone.
Yeah, it's just really a nice place, too. They have a lot of information and stuff, and you should really, you know, check out the probably the premier transgender place as far as education and information that's around.
Okay, we need to move forward quickly, but we will remind people about this before it happens.
Right. Okay, the next event would be Thursday, June 5th, and that's a party at Hex, which is a new bar in Boston that's at 100 Warrington in Boston.
That's near Jacques, near the Theater District.
Near Jacques,
Park Plaza,
and Theater
all of
District,
that.
Next to Nick's Comedy Stop.
Okay.
And we're having a party there, and it's called Breaking Out of the Closet.
Yay.
And so we're going to have live bands.
A couple of bands, right? A couple of bands.
A couple of bands.
Yeah,
we're going to have Transformer.
No, Transgression, but that's okay. No, Transgression. You're not even close.
Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you what, I got to get my
Now, who's the other band? I want to know who the other band is.
Oh, the other band is a threesome from Philadelphia called the Loatras.
Yeah, and this is a Riot Girl band, right?
Yeah.
Would you call? Okay.
Yeah, it's they put on a good show.
Good.
And there is a trans person in the group.
Well, that's a requirement. Minimum requirement.
Yeah, minimum requirement. One out of three.
Okay. Now what's the other event that's happening?
Okay, the other event would be Saturday, June 7th in the morning. Cambridge Lavender Alliance hosts us a pride brunch. Every
year. That's right. And they extend a warm welcome to the entire transgender community.
Oh yeah,
right?
It's very friendly. All these events are going to be really great.
And the food is marvy.
Yes.
Yeah, and the food is great.
Terrific.
And that is at 9:30 at the Cambridge City Hall on Mass Avenue.
Great.
Right at the Central Square. You can take the red line to Central Square.
So we got trans-friendly events Wednesday, Thursday nights, and Saturday.
And so before I have to go, the Transgender Pride Organizing Committee does have a website this year.
Okay. And that is?
And that is http://members.aol.com/TGPride97
TGPride97/TGPride or
yeah.
Okay. So it's at members.aol.com/TGPride97/TGPride.
Right.
Fabulous.
Or you can email me at TGPride97@AOL.com.
Thank you so much, Heather.
Okay.
We look forward to these events. Hal?
Yeah, by the way, Heather, welcome to Gender Talk.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah, first time. Welcome. Welcome, hon. Take good care. Thanks so much.
Okay, talk to y'all later.
You betcha. Bye-bye, hon. All right. Yeah, very good, Hal. That was a good catch. All right, let's get back into this. We've got Laura Font here. Is there anything else we need to do before we can go back and talk some more? No, let's talk some more.
Well, I think I want to announce the meeting for tomorrow night.
All right, let's talk. Let's break in with the meeting. We have Diane, by the way, back on the phone. And by the way, folks, 253-8810. We want to hear. We're going to talk now about this meeting. We want to hear from you and how you feel about this and what you feel would be an appropriate response for this community. Let's talk about the meeting, Laura.
On Thursday evening, which is tomorrow night at 7:00 at the Episcopal Divinity School. The address is 99 Brattle Street in Cambridge, which is in Harvard Square, and the meeting will be wheelchair accessible, and it's in a building called Washburn Lounge.
Yeah, but you mean it's in a room called Washburn Lounge?
Right, in Washburn Hall.
99 Brattle Street, just out of a few steps out of Harvard Square, or in Harvard Square.
Yes, and what we're going to do is basically gather, everyone is invited, and to talk about our response, especially the response we want to have on May 15th for the sentencing.
And the sentencing, I just found out today from the DA's office, has been pushed back to the 16th.
The 16th.
To Friday. Apparently, the defense attorney, Prince, could not make it on Thursday. So it's happening on Friday morning, the 16th. So, okay, the question is, what should we do? What is the right thing for us to do? If you have an idea, please give us a call. 253-8810 is our phone number. We want to hear from you. Let's see. And Hal, can we bring up Diane? Great. There have been a number of things that have been proposed. The sentencing is happening on Friday morning now. That's a week from this Friday, so mm-hmm. that's next Friday morning. And I think, Laurie, I think you and I are going to be there, it looks like, right?
Oh, that's at for least. Sure, yeah.
I can't imagine not being at the sentencing. I think it's really important to let the people in the courthouse know that this verdict is just completely outrageous.
Yeah.
Out to lunch.
When I heard about the verdict, it was actually, I was at a gathering for an ordination of a Unitarian Universalist minister, and it was all the ministers came up and told me about the verdict, and they were outraged.
You're kidding.
Wow.
They were outraged about this. And
that's incredible.
That's I found out Friday evening, and then I called you first thing on Saturday to talk about let's organize, because this is outrageous, and mm-hmm. spoke about it at church on Sunday, and there were so many people that were angry and saddened, and that mixture of, like, we have to do something, and what should we do?
Yep. Diane, I can hear you out there.
Oh, hi.
How are you doing tonight, hon?
She's
doing
back.
Good.
Yes.
I'm doing good.
So you heard our interview with Gabrielle?
Yes, I did.
Okay. What do you have to add in terms of, briefly, if you would, please, but what do you have to add in terms of what you know about William Palmer? I guess you met him?
Yes, I did. I'm just surprised. I was subpoenaed to go to court, and it had taken them a while to come and subpoena me, and I didn't know why. And now I guess I had spoke to Adrian Lynch, and she told me that they were holding me on a rebuttal, which would mean they waited for William Palmer to take the stand, and I guess they were waiting for him to say that he'd never been down to Jocks, he never, had visited Playland, and I had actually met him down at Jocks in the end of 94. Mm-hmm. He had approached me, tell me he was interested in me, said he had some money, and I said, well, I'm really not interested.
Interesting. So he was prepared, essentially offering you money.
Yeah, and that was the first time.
Do you think he knew that you were something other than a genetic woman?
I think, well, on my first conversation, he didn't talk about anything about, what he wanted to do. I mean, he just offered me,
just offered you money.
Right. Then I'd say in the beginning of 95, he had also stopped me one time when I was leaving Jocks. I was going to go to Playland in his Pathfinder. And, I refused again. And then the third time I met him was in May. I had seen him out at Playland but never talked to him. But the third time that I talked to him, he said, look, I'm really interested in you. We sat down. He didn't say his name was William. He said his name was Bill to me.
Yeah.
He said he was really interested in me. He offered me money. I was thinking about it, and he also asked me if I wanted a party, which, would mean go back to him.
Did he say anything to indicate that he knew that you are you a preoperative transsexual?
No, I'm not. I'm a transvestite.
You're a transvestite.
Yes.
Okay. Did he say anything to indicate that he knew you were a transvestite?
No, not until, like I said, the third meeting, when I said I wasn't interested. I was going home, and he said, "Can I ask you a question?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Do you have breasts?" And I said, "No." So I take it he had a thing for preoperative transsexuals. Mm. Somebody who had breasts.
Yeah. Okay. Fascinating. Absolutely
My
fascinating.
Goodness.
Diane, what a trip. This whole thing is quite a travesty.
Well, even when people see me today, they either think I'm a real woman or they think I'm a preoperative transsexual.
Good for you. I bet that makes you feel good.
Yes, it does.
Good.
But, I'm very upfront and honest with, people mm-hmm. that, I'm with. If somebody thinks I'm a real woman, I explain to them, hey, look, I'm a transvestite.
So, Diane, yes. Did you end up speaking at the trial?
No. Like I said, I wasn't allowed to go to the trial because I was subpoenaed.
Right.
The only time that I would go to the trial was to give my testimony.
And what happened was William Palmer acknowledged that he had hung out at Playland at Jocks.
Mm. Yes, he
stopped
did.
Denying that. But he continued to deny. No, I guess there was testimony from a couple girls who said they'd been with him, but he continued to deny that.
I read an article in the paper, and they're saying that the witnesses that testified were all Chanel's friends, and they would say anything to do anything.
Uh-huh.
I was not talking with Chanel when this thing happened.
Uh-huh.
I had read the article and saw his picture in the paper.
Yeah.
And when he said that the reason why he did this is because he didn't realize that she was a man, I looked at his picture and I said, oh, no, that's not right, you know, because I've seen this guy before, and he knew what I was.
Good for you.
You know, and it just, I'm very upset about this. I just can't see how the jury could come to an assault and battery decision when, you know, I also did the makeup on her when she did her wig.
Really?
So, I mean, she did have a couple marks on her neck. Her lip was busted out, and, you know, other evidence, I mean, other things that I heard of, I just can't believe that the jury made a decision on that.
In other words, you saw her after she was dead?
Yes, I saw her the day of her wake. She had no makeup on. I did her, you know, applied her foundation, her blush, you know, her lipstick. So, I mean, I saw the body.
Yeah.
It was very upsetting.
Diane, all I can say is thank you very much.
Thank you, Nancy.
I think you've helped us all to understand what has really gone down in this case. And on behalf of everyone out there who's listening, thank you very much. We appreciate your setting us straight on this.
Yes.
Thank you. You're
and Nancy, if you can come tomorrow night, I don't know if you're able to.
Diane.
Oh.
Diane, actually, I think you're planning on coming tomorrow night, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
that's great.
Although I won't be dressed.
Oh, well, you have to wear something. They won't let you
come
if
you're
I mean, it is the Episcopal Divinity School.
I won't be
you
a woman.
To go and drag.
No, I mean, you can't.
I'll go and
drag. I thought you
drag.
Meant you weren't going to wear any clothes. Oh.
Nancy's so disappointed.
How stupid of me.
I'm going in jeans and sneakers.
Great. Okay, so you know where it is now. 99 Brattle Street, right near Harvard Square. Anybody can tell you where Brattle Street is. Anybody on the street should be able to tell you.
I know where it is.
Okay, and then what's the name of the room?
It's Washburn Lounge. It's
Washburn Lounge.
Modern-looking building.
What floor is the lounge on, do you know?
It's you just go up one level of stairs, and it's right there.
Actually, Nancy, what I'll do is I'll call you before I get ready to leave, because I'm not too far from you.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks, hon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in tonight.
Okay.
Bye. All right, Diane. So I think we have another call, Hal. Is that what this is? I think I got an indication we have another caller. Hello, this is Gender Talk. Do we have anybody else on the phone? Nope.
Hal? Hi, Nancy. It's Rob Johnson.
Rob, thank you for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm all right.
Hi,
My
Rob.
My goodness. We had Gabrielle on.
Oh, you did.
And and we just had Diane, who is somebody who's a transvestite who's been hanging out around Jocks and or frequenting Jocks and places like that, and who has had repeated encounters with William Palmer, not nasty encounters, but just repeated incidences of coming across him and seeing him down there. Gabrielle also spoke to William Palmer, being a frequenter of a club called the Haymarket that closed in 1989 that was also a tranny hangout.
But that's the thing, though. Like, if you just go to Playland and ask a few people, you know, does anybody here know William Palmer? Like, half the people will say, yeah. Oh, yeah, that guy. He did a lot of cocaine. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I'm just coming out of a meeting, and so unfortunately I wasn't able to listen to the rest of the show, but I would have loved to have heard other people's thoughts.
Yeah. Well, the phone lines are open, 253-8810, if anyone else. You know, Rob, I spoke with, if anybody else wants to talk with us and tell us what they think, we are going to be trying to formulate a response tomorrow night. You know, what action would be appropriate? Rob, I spoke with Adrian Lynch today. Adrian was the prosecuting was the assistant district attorney who prosecuted the case. Adrian said she didn't feel that the judge prejudiced the case. She didn't, although the judge didn't make it easy, she didn't feel that the judge was the deciding factor. She felt that she presented sufficient evidence. In fact, she said she doesn't know what more the medical examiner could have done. And in fact, didn't you say that the medical examiner's testimony seemed to hold up reasonably well on the stand on cross-examination?
Well, I was actually not present for the medical examiner's testimony.
Okay, that must have been somebody else.
But from I was conveying to you Lucy Murray Brown's, the victim advocate in the case.
Okay.
Her assessment of the testimony. But I also did speak to Kevin Rothstein, who was a reporter for the Phoenix that was there.
Right.
And I think he felt like there were some issues where the medical examiner got a little bit tripped up by the defense attorney. There was something came up about him being sued in another case. And, you know, there were some obvious problems that came up, as you heard, Nancy, which the defense attorney really highlighted in his closing arguments.
Yeah.
Some discrepancies and, you know, whether the omissions, whether the failure to do a really in-depth autopsy on the potential of a cocaine overdose was justifiable, was standard procedure, was appropriate. I mean, it appears as if it was appropriate.
Well, but Adrian
not
Lynch,
required to do all of that.
But Adrian Lynch repeatedly said, Rob, that a cocaine overdose
is a diagnosis of exclusion.
That's right. So if you have other factors that apparently have caused death, then you don't do that. That is.
But see, this is the issue. I think it came down to the defense attorney's ability to obscure that,
yes,
you know, and make it appear as if what the medical examiner was doing was really shoddy and incomplete, when in fact it wasn't.
I felt like the defense attorney was very well organized. He was extremely methodical, and he did an excellent job of confusing things.
You know, yeah, I thought he was extremely, extremely good too, particularly in the closing arguments. Very well, you know, without being agitated, without being, you know, in
very
a very calm and controlled,
yes,
manner, really laid out the reasonable doubt. And I think that the jury obviously bought that.
If anything, I would say that the assistant district attorney's intense caring about this case weighed against her. In the closing argument, she seemed quite angry.
Yeah.
And that probably she also didn't play up to the jury the way the defense did. The defense inflated jury ego, said, "You are the important ones." And then later he said, and I quote, he said, if you do not acquit this man, you will not be able to live with yourselves," end quote. And you know, perhaps that was the most telling line in the whole thing.
You know, one thing that was interesting, I don't know if people saw the Boston Tab had a short article on
it. Oh, I haven't seen that.
And they actually quoted Palmer's brother, younger brother. I think his name was, I don't remember, Bob or Ron, I can't remember. But he actually raised some interesting points and said that if it were not for this defense attorney and the expert medical witnesses, you know, my brother wouldn't have gotten off. And he said that the tab also commented that Michael Bodden, the medical expert who also testified in the O.J. Simpson trial, was paid at least $5,000 for his testimony.
That's what Gabrielle told us. She told us he got $250 an hour for 2,000 hours, which would be $5,000.
And then
money.
20 hours.
Tall.
20 hours.
The
I mean,
final.
20 hours.
The final. the final comment, which I think is, you know, it's pointed. It's actually a pointed comment in both directions. It said that, and this is Palmer's brother saying, you know, if this had been a defendant with no money, he'd be in jail right now for life.
Yeah, it really did seem to be an economic result. In fact, I had a carefully prepared statement that I was going to read here tonight, but I've kind of decided not to do it just because it's, you know, too much. But one of the points I wanted to make is that our legal system seems to have an inherent flaw in it, which is that we've crafted a legal system that says better that 100 guilty people should go free than one innocent person be imprisoned. But what we fail to take into account is the fact that money virtually guarantees that you can be one of those 100 every time. Mm-hmm. And lack of money tends to group you with that one, with the guilty, with the people who can't defend themselves, and makes you that one that is going to go to jail or not, you know, have things go your way. So money really skews our justice system, and it's an egregious problem.
The true crime is being poor.
You know, the amount of justice you get is determined by how much money you can pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Justice is not something that is given in equal measure to everybody. Rather, it is a commodity that is bought.
And, you know, the other thing is that it was clear that a court process is not really a process that yields truth necessarily, but yields a finding based on how truth can be manipulated and portrayed.
Yes, yes. So it yields a result, but the result isn't necessarily in direct relationship to the truth.
You know, when I heard the comment that Nancy, you recently just said regarding the defense attorney talking about
You won't be able to live with yourself?
Yeah, you won't. Yeah. And I'm like, how can the jury live with themselves? And how can the judge live with themselves? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about the morality of this, of how literally William Palmer got away with murder.
You know how they can live with themselves? Because the defense gave them the opportunity, and this is the first thing out of their mouths when the press hit the jury, they said the prosecution didn't do their job. So they can blame the prosecution. So they don't.
So they don't have to take the blame themselves.
They don't have to take the blame. They took their
They took
the safe path, so they can live with themselves. They didn't take the risk of not being able to live with themselves. And at the same time, the defense gave. I mean, this. I thought this was a very sophisticated defense. And Adrian, if you're listening, my apologies, but I really think you were outmaneuvered by this defense. And he was. I thought his closing arguments were just superb.
I think for all the people out there listening who weren't at the closing arguments, I think if you had been, you would find it more you would understand how the jury might have come to this conclusion and still be able to live with themselves, because the way it was laid out, you could see there'd be places to hold on to reasonable doubt.
Yes.
And they were given clear instructions, as they should be, that they needed a unanimous conclusion beyond a reasonable doubt. Now that's the law.
The instructions to the jury were good. And the... God, I just lost it. Anyway. Oh, you know what? Oh, yeah. What I was going to say is that the defense basically created a lot of hoopla around the competency of the prosecution, and then in Adrienne's anger during her closing arguments, she played right into that. She played right into, I think, the defense's hands by letting her emotion
kind of get the better of
her. Yeah, she basically she sounded almost as if she was chiding the jury to this is obviously the verdict you mm-hmm. should be giving.
Mm-hmm. I know.
As opposed to guilting the jury.
Yes.
Are we able to get a transcript of the trial?
I talked with Adrian about that today. That's going to take a lot of money, but we might do it. We'll see. Mm. Rob, you had something? I'm sorry. We have just a couple of minutes.
I don't know whether you had talked about the motive or the sort of scenario that was.
I didn't know. We haven't spoken to that. Yeah, no. I didn't.
Time is short, I know, but I think that's the other thing that's really worth talking about, and perhaps that's
time's
something
very
we
short,
talk about
Rob.
At the meeting. But you know. I think that's the other thing that the closing arguments that Adrian portrayed in terms of trying to convey what Palmer's motivation was was hard to buy or hard to sort of.
And I said that to Adrian today, that I didn't think her motive was compelling, that he killed her to shut her up. I think he probably killed her out of anger. With that, that's it, Rob. We're done. Thank you so much for calling in, everybody. That's it. Remember, the meeting is tomorrow night, 99 Brattle Street, 7 p.m. What's the name of the room again?
Washburn Lounge.
Oh, Washburn Lounge. So we'll put up signs or something on the door or something. 99 Brattle Street, 7 p.m. tomorrow night. Help us craft a community response to this gross injustice. That does it for tonight, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with a little bit more lighter show.
Our 100th show.
By the way, you know, I got to tell you, I spent Monday, all day Monday,
lobbying Lobby Day?
Our representatives, our Massachusetts state representatives mm-hmm. in Washington, mm-hmm. both in the House of Representatives and the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the staff in, I think, six different offices, including both our senators and four different representatives, have agreed to sign on to a letter to Janet Reno asking for the Department of Justice to investigate violence against transgender people and whether
there's
a need for some serious action there. Yes.
Way
this
to will go.
This is the first move ever by the federal government on behalf of transgender people. So this should be happening, and we've got a meeting with the Attorney General's office mm-hmm, next mm-hmm. week. All kinds of great stuff happening, folks. So this Chanel Pickett terrible injustice will in some ways have a positive effect. That does it for tonight, everyone, on behalf of all of us here on Gender Talk. Thanks for listening. Rhythm of Taipei is up next.
By the way, next week, David Skondras.
That's right.
Oh, that's great.
All right.
He's a wonderful speaker. Wonderful.
Good night, everyone. The views and opinions presented on the preceding program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. It's Karen's fault. And good night, everybody.
Good night.